Saturday night special, nah. Downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara Street. And beautiful Latinos strut by on 6 deep in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean. Santa Clara and a McDonald's parking lot surrounded by 4 police cruisers while 2 bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally and a 3rd one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. You know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, shit, look out downtown, but somewhere, someone's getting arrested for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown in downtown. And everywhere, 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 that's what's going down for being brown in downtown.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. It's the 2-hour evening show every Thursday, and you're listening to Free Radio at 101.1 FM, also streaming at freakradio.org. In case you want to get in public service announcements or you want to get on the air yourself with your own show, why don't you call the voicemail line at 427-4523 and learn some more about it, or just download an application at freakradio.org. Not too hard to do. And if you got something you want to put out to the community, maybe this is the way to do it, particularly if you like what you hear on Free Radio. You can also reach this show live for the next 2 hours at 427-3772, 427-FRSC, and I will put you on the air, and I will, of course, try to veer you toward the subjects that I'm interested in, which have to do with local politics and civil rights and civil liberties and human rights, and essentially the problem we have with the lack of real protections for people who are poor and the disparity of power and so forth. So that's my constant rap, and I try to approach it from a variety of angles, a lot of it having to do with people living outside who are poor and homeless and the laws that criminalize them in dear old progressive Santa Cruz. So, number to call in is 427-3772, 427-3772, area code 831. And you can also reach me off the air on the Huff Line, Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or the remains of it, the group I work with, and the number is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. It's a voicemail with a not entirely outdated message, where you can actually leave a lengthy message of your own, and I'll get back to you. If you want to help out in terms of furthering any of the causes you hear happening, being expressed here on this radio show that you're about to hear or have heard in the past, that's the number to call if you want to volunteer some time or help. I'm looking for people who can help with computer work, who want to do writing, who are good at design, who don't mind going into court and monitoring what's going on to poor people there, who want to keep an eye on the upcoming city council follies, the races that are coming up for the Santa Cruz City Council this fall, the fall follies. Any of those issues or others, if you want to help put together the long dormant street shit sheet, if you want to help out with the Huff website is huffsantacruz.org. Need your help. Huffsantacruz.org. I'm also going to be facing a judge and a jury on September 25th. Two misdemeanors, which I've talked about at length in the past, disrupting a city council meeting, by which we mean not following the orders of Michael Rutkin, who was then mayor and is now running again for city council for his nth term. Nobody seems to find a way to put that man out to pasture or perhaps into some more useful corporate pursuit where he might be more at home and more honest, though he does ride a motorcycle to work. I guess that's something, you know. Anyway, I have a trial coming up on the 25th. I still have... there's still some uncertainty. They may make us go to the very edge, as they do in many cases, of the trial date, and then drop the charges after 14 months. And I'm going to assume that they're not, and I'm going to hold them accountable for their behavior, because I have a lawsuit of my own pending in federal court against the Santa Cruz City Council, which has to do with a pattern of repressive behavior against activists, a series of arbitrary, unconstitutional, and in some cases illegal rules, which the city council attempts to manipulate, repress, channel, and defang the public voice, particularly the voices from the public that I would like to be heard, namely those who want to stand up for the rights of people who have their rights trampled every day by institutional hate crimes initiated by, supported by, and boosted by the Santa Cruz City Council, to wit, the Santa Cruz sleeping ban, the downtown ordinances, special provisions in the permit parking laws that particularly criminalize homeless people parking their vehicles at night, curfew laws that criminalize everybody who go into the parks or now into any areas that Danette Shoemaker, the new czarina, actually she's not that new, but current czarina of the Parks and Rec Department, whatever she wants goes under the new laws passed by the Rutkin Council. I guess we should call it the Matthews Council now, since it is Mayor Matthews who is figureheading this latest seven-person gang. There are two women on it, after all. I will be reviewing my case and some of the tape of a year and 2 months ago, for those of you who have forgotten that thrilling occasion when I was dragged away in a pain compliance hold by Lieutenant Clark from the microphone because I wanted the same 2 minutes that the person before me and the person after me had. Anyway, it's all also detailed on indybay.org/Santa Cruz. Again, indy, I-N-D-Y, bay, B-A-Y, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, which is the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. And I've written a number of articles about that and other things. If you want to follow the kind of stuff that I talk about on the show and do so not having to wait for my wade through my tirades, you can just wade through my rhetoric instead if you want to go to the Indie Bay website and check it out there. And that's a prospect that might be less daunting. And also, you can catch other people on Indie Media. Even Becky Johnson, I think, is being allowed the occasional story on Indie Media if it's not concerning Israel and the Middle East. We all have our little problems, and that's one of the censorship problems that's on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. But, hey, why do I mention it for the nth time? Well, because it's still there. What can you say? What can you say is really the question, and you can call in if you have stuff to say, 427-3772. I'm expecting a call, a couple of calls, one from the ventriloquist man downtown. You may remember him. He's the fellow, you may have seen him sitting, is it near the bookshop Santa Cruz, maybe a little further down on the sidewalk, with his dummy on his lap chatting away. He has had a tangle with the city and wants to talk about it, or he did last night. Maybe he'll be calling in, as I invited him to do. Then I'm also hoping to get a call from Simba Kenyatta. You may recall, those of you who, those of you who read the Sentinel know that Simba is one of, I think it's 6 or 7 candidates running for the Santa Cruz City Council, and he's... I suppose one of the few I might actually vote for if I were in a voting mood, you know. I suppose I will be, because there are initiatives I want to vote for, like raising the minimum wage, Neil Coonerty's objections notwithstanding, and also tax and regulate, don't arrest and harass and destroy the lives of marijuana users. Weak, ineffectual, and partial as I think the measure is, I think it's a baby step in the right direction. And even though the organizers of the campaign haven't taken my advice and aren't blasting the city council and holding mass protests and doing smokeouts and other acts that I think might be ultimately more effective than relying on out-of-county money and the low-profile approach. Nonetheless, obviously, it's the right thing that marijuana should be like any other medication, drug, or herb available to anyone over the age of 21 who wants to use it. And it shouldn't be the basis for the kind of police state crap that is the regular fare of Bob Lee in the district attorney's office and all the district attorneys and public defenders who get their livelihood living, sucking the blood and lives of the people who have to suffer under the terrorist war on drugs, which goes on every day at the county building. So, hopefully, we're going to get a call in from Simba Kenyatta, or I may call him and try to grab him at home. He was going to come into the station and talk, be interviewed, but he either got cold feet at the last minute, which I hope is not the case, and he told me it was not the case, that he had some other commitments that he had to deal with. And whether that's true or not, I certainly hope that he makes time in the future to do this, because I believe some of his constituency, Simba's potential constituency, is here. Simba's an African-American who was on the Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Commission back in the early 90s that struggled to establish some kind of police review board by uniting a number of groups and also excluding another group and excluding me. But hey, don't I always get excluded? Or isn't that often the case? Or isn't that occasionally the case, at least? So he's worth listening to, and certainly he's worth questioning. I'm going to see what he's up to. You may have read a little bit about him in the Good Times. I mentioned it last week's Good Times, not this one, where he's described as questioning the downtown ordinances. I'm surprised he's just questioning them and not just relegating them to the trash can from which they came, or let's say throwing them back into the merchant cabal from which they came, returning them to the failed business owner and worker Jackson's Shoes and telling them, you know, you may sell upscale shoes to upscale people, and that's fine. And actually, I got nothing wrong with Candy Jackson and the Jackson family, who were nice enough to me until, of course, I started raising the issue of what is Candy Jackson doing circulating petitions that criminalize poor people on Pacific Avenue. And then, of course, I was banned from their store while it existed. Merchants have a business dealing with their merchandise, and I'm glad that there are, you know, merchants present. Are they the be-all and the end-all of the community, as some say? No. I don't think so. So, you have opinions out there. You're welcome to pass them on to me again and to pass them on to everybody else. who's listening, hopefully masses of people, 427-3772. And while we're waiting for that outpouring of sentiment, I'm going to play you some of the street interviews that I occasionally do. So here we go.
For the know-it-alls on Pacific Avenue near the Palomar Inn. And as has been pointed out to me, it is September, not May 6th. But, hey, you're dealing with a man who's timeless and therefore speaks as he speaks. It's around 8 o'clock, and it's a pleasant Tuesday evening. We're here with a man who has what he claims is not a display device, although it is capable of holding tangible objects. So one senses perhaps he has some sort of in with the police department for violating a code section, which allows such a display device only for an hour, then to be moved forcibly, if necessary, by our police department, or to make sure that the merchants are not alarmed by having too permanent a political table or performer nearby. But Swami, what's been happening? Give us the update.
The only thing that's been happening on any issue with my display device is I'm not allowed to have anybody sitting with me on the Dharma blanket. This is from Officer Pam. I don't remember her last name.
Bechtel.
Ah. One of these days I'll learn how to pronounce that. I have difficulty with hard names.
Is Pam jealous of people who are sitting near you? Is that the problem?
I really have no idea. Apparently there's one of these ordinances that says a person with a display device isn't supposed to have people sitting near them.
No, there isn't. Actually, the only thing that actually mentions anything of the kind that I'm aware of is the panhandling ordinance, which says if you are soliciting for money, which does not include display devices, it's a different ordinance, then you have to have someone at least 3 feet away. Let me put it this way. It doesn't say 3 feet, because you can't do it in a group of two if you're soliciting funds. So Pam is, I would have to guess, and I don't wish to be cruel to her or unfair, making up what seems to her to be appropriate again.
Well, that's certainly a relief to hear from me. I can see I need to do a little bit of research to find out exactly what is correct in this issue.
And indeed, if you want a copy of the downtown ordinances, you can, of course, go online to the Huff website, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at huffsantacruz.org. Or you can go by the SAFE meeting, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the street performers who meet every Wednesday from 6 to 10 in front of New Leaf Market. That'll be tomorrow, I guess. And usually there's a little kind of mini Huff section set up where you can get copies of some of those downtown ordinances, including the display device ordinance, the panhandling ordinance, the move along every hour ordinance if the police don't like you, and all these other fine ordinances which are passed and somewhat unique to Santa Cruz.
Well, that's certainly good to know. I'm definitely going to be going down to the SAFE jam session tomorrow evening and picking up these things.
When did Pam give you this info? I'll just make this claim.
It was actually about a week or so ago, and she gave me a specific warning that if she saw me with people sitting with me again, she would write me a ticket. Again, I would be very interested in seeing the exact ordinances, because what I am doing is not panhandling at all. I do not ask for anything. In fact, it's one of my monastic vows, is to ask for nothing and to accept only what is offered. I feel I'm doing a very valuable service down here. I spend a lot of time praying for peace within Santa Cruz and giving peace of mind and love of God and taking away a little bit of people's karma every day. And that's really what I'm doing here. And many people have come...
Karma vacuum cleaners, so to speak?
I'm not quite that powerful. More like help on one single math problem in your 20-year school history. That's that level of karmic aid.
Small but mighty, or perhaps just mighty small.
Mighty small. Mighty small. I'm not that advanced yet.
Now, what have you seen out here in terms of how police are treating people? Any particular comments or observations?
Pretty much they seem to let people do what they feel to be comfortable with doing. It seems to be very, very positive. It looks as though they're using the idea of if you expect the best from people, you'll get the best from people. And it appears very much that that's the technique they're using.
So you haven't heard many tales of woe from people who feel they've been mistreated by the police?
They haven't come to talk to me about it.
You mean, and as a spiritual counselor, you're not keeping confidences here?
Oh, I certainly do keep confidences, but that one topic is not one that has often come up. There's the occasional person, of course, and that's to be expected in any society. But I haven't heard a great deal of animosity towards the local police.
Do you give the police a thumbs up, perhaps an A rating?
Oh, absolutely.
There you have it. Who says I don't report positive, deluded notions about the police department on my show?
I suppose that would be correct, yes.
There you are. Well, thank you, Swami. Any final words of comfort, or shall we say, affliction for the comfortable and comfort for the afflicted?
Just remember, keep on trying. If you want to succeed in something, don't stop trying. Most people who fail, fail because they quit too soon. If they just kept going another 5 minutes, they would have succeeded. So keep on trying, everybody. God bless you.
Thank you, Swami. Well, it's about 8 o'clock. We're here at the Perennial Safe event on September 6, 2006. And it's a gang of various musical makers, violinists, flautists, percussion types. Here's an aimless youth giving out flyers. And a traveling Swami. What do you think, Swami?
I really enjoy coming out here on Wednesday nights. These people have a lot of fun, and it just really charges me up.
Well, coming from a religious authority, I think that speaks for itself.
Well, I don't know about authority, but I am a very spiritual person, and the energy these people give out is just totally loving, totally together with each other, and it's really what the spiritual ideal is all about, is loving one another, enjoying one another's company, and enjoying having fun with each other.
So come on down, bring your instrument. You got some free food here, a number of different kinds of folks, some ecstatic, some merely reclining and reclusive, but coming out for this event. So check it out. There's your an owl of the evening. So, Alex, you're doing community service here.
Yes. Yeah.
You're giving out a flyer.
Yeah, I'm giving out a flyer.
And what do you think of this kind of work? How's it treating you?
I think it's eye-opening almost to see how many people out here struggle, but it's feels good to like see them singing and dancing and stuff and having a good time even though it's cold out here and they have anywhere to stay.
Any unusual experiences? Has anybody had any unpleasant experiences so far? Anything that's turned you off to this?
No, not at all. I mean, some people are eccentric and like to get up and dance, but there's nothing scary.
As long as they don't crash into you.
Exactly.
Thank you, Alex.
You're welcome.
You, sir, with the drum. What is your name?
Wilbur.
Come on, hey, now just don't jump away. The energy bunny is retreating. Any comments? He's got nothing to say at this time.
One of my heroes, John.
And that's a little of the recent street scene. Not much terribly exciting happening, but hey, SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, continues its weekly celebration, food serving, join in the singing, and re-seizure of public space. I should say the reclaiming of public space. And indeed, that's what a larger demonstration supporting the urban village, urban farm, I should say, in Los Angeles that was destroyed by the police a couple months ago.
Sheriff's Department.
In the studio with me is the knowledgeable Thomas Levitt, who also does the wake-up call whenever he can get up in time on 7:30 Sunday morning, 7:30 to 9:30. And he's playing a number of sort of historic tapes that I've laid on him around the earlier activist segments when homeless activists or activists concerned with restoring rights for poor people were more active, particularly people who are actually homeless themselves, like Wanton Dave Jacobs, Red Top Robert Flory, Linda the Lark Edwards, dare I say Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, who still makes an occasional sally into town, Calamity Jane Immler, a bunch of ancient names from the long ago, 15 years ago, but nonetheless inspirational in some respects and also nostalgic for me. So let's listen now to a bit of the a recent Santa Cruz protest, some of which I think was probably captured by the V-Man or Bradley of Indie Media, but some of which may not have been, and even though this was several months ago, and even though the cause célèbre for which it was done, the urban farm, is, I believe, gone now, though I haven't really done any recent research on it. Maybe I'll do that while this is playing. They're also talking about local issues, which are equally important and which need to draw numbers of people to support them to make sure that we get some changes. I mean, we're having this sort of mock council race coming up, where you have essentially people who have the same views as the people who are in city council running for the offices. So there's going to be very little change. You'll get probably the two incumbents, Matthews and Rotkin again, and probably Bruce Van Allen, former mayor and comrade in arms of Mike Rotkin, who I like to call him Rotkin Jr., but that's probably not entirely fair, and I want to give him a chance to appear on the air to gainsay that statement. He was, after all, the only one of the few mayors. I guess Celia Scott also at one time said she was against the sleeping ban, and I think she was. The law that criminalizes poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night, even though there's shelter tonight for less than 45 of the 1,500 to 2,000 who are actually in the city limits. Bruce Van Allen, back in 1981, I believe, or maybe 83 or thereabouts, was mayor. And he said he opposed the sleeping ban law. I don't know if he ever did anything about it, and I do know that he has made no high-profile statements whatsoever in the last two decades that I've heard about. So I'm rather skeptical, rather cynical, and I am not beyond being convinced, though, and I'm not being re-persuaded or reinvigorated with hope. Who knows? I mean, if we'll invite him to be on the air and see if he even wants to come near us. And we'll also get in touch with Simba. But first, let's hearken back a month or two to this protest where people actually took to the streets of Santa Cruz. Can you imagine? Without a permit, I might add. Heavens.
Because this is the erosion of public space. I mean, what's happening with Santa Cruz and Pacific Avenue
is actually the
reduction of public space. This is semi-public space. This actually belongs to someone, but they have made it available to the public. So we can walk through here. There's actually a park bench there. There are sometimes tables and chairs that used to be here when the Asian Rose was here. And I think, once this is gone, that actually will just push people into more limited space. There's sidewalks, and that's restricted too. Benches are disappearing from sidewalks. But how many benches were on Pacific Avenue 5 or 10 years ago was much more than the number of benches that exist now. So I think it really is indicative of the orientation of our local government and leaders and people in power, because, there's this space here, and the city actually threatened eminent domain to take over this space from Ron Al that owned this space. And instead are allowing Louis Rittenhouse, is a very wealthy developer who has the space across from the Cinema 9 that has been fallow space since the earthquake. And yet that's not public space. That's fenced off. And there was actually a proposal to create a public commons there, to have a park space, a performance space there, that thousands of people signed a petition for that, and there was a move to have that happen, and the city really didn't support that at all. They weren't willing to do that to him, but they were willing to do it to the person here. So I think that really reflects some of the agenda of what exists in local government. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kind of soon. If anyone has any information on what's going on in Watsonville, that would be really helpful. I think we need to be here to network and communicate with each other and to support local community projects that are happening in this community. And I know that that's what this event's about, but it'd be kind of cool maybe to put out that information on a table somewhere, write down some email addresses. And I've been keeping up to date with a lot of what's going on in the South Central Farmers and have visited the area. And I think it's important to connect these issues to what's going on in our community and not just think, oh, that the Latino community only exists in Watsonville, because that's not true. As we saw on May 1st, so many people are not integrated but exist in our community here in Santa Cruz. And a lot of my friends that only speak Spanish or that are part of the Latino community here feel that they're not really integrated into community gardens here or don't really know how to navigate. It's not that they don't feel welcome, but they don't know where to find points of entry. And some folks that I've been working with lately want to start their own efforts in solidarity with the South Central Farmers in L.A., have family there that work and live up here, and they want to start growing their own food, medicinal plants, all the stuff that we're stoked on. So I think it'd be really cool if we, through these efforts, we can collaborate a project here and find space, even if we could do it with our own guerrilla efforts, and occupy space to grow our own food. I think it's a big power of resistance, as we've seen it being threatened with South Central Farmers. So I would like to motivate. I unfortunately have to work really soon, but maybe we can start like a list of paper and network or put our emails down and collaborate. That would be really awesome. And I'm down to be a translator for any future efforts.
All right. The day after tomorrow at City Council, there are going to be two more repressive laws coming up. People can probably hear me, but...
Yeah, probably. But I don't know if you want to...
I don't know. Is this better, or does it make any difference?
Better.
At the 2 o'clock session of the Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday, today is Sunday, there's going to be two laws coming up. One of them is the law that will triple all enforcement fines when the City Council decides that they have some, you know, questionable event coming up. They can suddenly declare that this is a special public safety matter if this law passes. And it's likely to pass. It's so far gone through two first readings. We'll go for a final second reading at the 2 o'clock session of the Santa Cruz City Council. And it will penalize you triply for doing things like having an open container, violating a traffic law like we did today by walking down the street without a permit. I presume we're without a permit. We permit, you know, the Constitution permits, but the Santa Cruz City does not and the police department does not. So that's coming up if anyone's interested, again, on Tuesday in the afternoon, probably around 3. There's also the entire city budget is coming up. They're going to ram it through on what's called the consent agenda, including the city attorney's $500,000, what we pay him for what he's doing essentially to prosecute us and to write up laws that, like the one I just mentioned. The other law that's coming up for first reading is a law that will give the head of Parks and Rec, Danette Shoemaker, complete power to close off spaces without going to the Parks and Recreation Commission, which, though it's appointed by the City Council, is still a group that has some public representation. Once this law passes, she can arbitrarily decide that a police officer can come to any park in any green area in Santa Cruz that's owned by the city and say it's off limits during whatever time she wants. Hence, if they find you there, if you're homeless, if you're sleeping there, if you're walking there, if you're planting food there, whatever you're doing, you can be given a trespass ticket once this law passes. So I'm not saying that City Council is going to listen to people, but if a bunch of people showed up and expressed their outrage, if you found it enjoyable for other reasons, it might be a good thing to do on Tuesday. I think we found out how much the City Council listens to us. What?
What time is that
at? The City Council afternoon session starts early at 2. And I'm going to interrupt this briefly. This, of course, was the July 25th City Council session I think we were talking about, or maybe it was the the July 11th session. But in any case, in the studio with us, Thomas Levitt, actually, we've done some talking about John Barisoni, the city attorney's expenses and the amount of money that the city pays out to him each year, and also the kinds of repressive laws he writes, some of which, of course, are not his responsibility. But, Thomas, you found, after chatting with Mayor Mike Rodkin, some new information about our favorite city attorney?
The city staff sees him as another staff member, as a fellow worker and colleague, which, you know, means that, like, this contract is not really evaluated purely on a financial basis because they have a personal relationship. Barisoni actually, I believe, has earned over $1 million last year from the city. That flat rate contract is only a portion of the money the city pays him.
Flat rate contract has about, what, $575,000 or something?
I think it was like $525,000 last year, and this year it's going up 10% to $575,000. He also gets paid, you know, on an hourly basis to defend the city against lawsuits. And I believe he might have some other consulting arrangements or other things.
Not to mention the city of Capitola is kicking down bucks to him because he's also
their city attorney. Several other special districts within the county. So the city is not his only source of business. And I believe, and this is, I'm not 100% sure, but this was my understanding from coming out of the conversation, is that an attorney that works for his firm, or some staff member that works for his firm, is acting in as an acting risk containment specialist, something along those orders. And it's my understanding that basically her job is to decide whether or not to settle with people who file claims against the city, to, you know, make recommendations and evaluate the level of risk associated with that.
He gets paid by the hour for all the work he does in contesting those claims. So that would seem to be a potential conflict of interest, unless she is really, this risk. I thought the risk assessment manager was a separate office, though.
But it is a separate office, but the person left, and they're contracting with Barisoni's firm to perform that function until they are able to hire a replacement.
So
that's my understanding.
In other words, it's all in the family, is what you're saying.
And so, yes. But, I mean, generally speaking, the city seems to feel that the city attorney is willing to voluntarily notify them whenever he sees a conflict of interest based on his own professional ethics, and that the city attorney, you know, when fighting these lawsuits, et cetera, does so at the direction of the city council. They don't see, and Mike Rodkin and the assistant city manager, Martin Bernal.
You spoke to Mike Rodkin, the mayor,
and Bernal.
Of course, you failed to record the conversation, right?
No, I did not record the conversation.
A sad moment,
but
nonetheless.
I actually think that, like, just for the sanity of your listeners.
You're sparing us another hour with Mike Rodkin.
Another 2 hours with Mike Rodkin or something. Yes,
so he spent 2 hours with you?
He spent well over the amount of time that was set aside, yes. He was
did he enlighten you on the nature of the city attorney's good deeds, so we can perhaps present the positive side of John Barisoni?
He believes that the city is getting a good deal. He believes that the flat rate contract is a good deal, even though the level of discount after hourly rates is relatively low, because it prevents the city from having any additional risk, and the city does get some discount for stuff that more or less they would have to pay for anyway, apparently. You know, and they believe that it's cost effective compared to other jurisdictions. That didn't really convince me, but they convinced me that they're convinced and that they're not likely to change their minds.
Well, you probably were convinced that they were convinced after the first few minutes. What made you sit there for 2 hours?
Well,
listening to
I had
Rodkin?
Some other business on non-Huff nature that
oh,
I was discussing
to
with
slip
him.
Through a private bill, eh? There, Levitt.
Yeah. I'm sure
I have a lot of Huff United for friendship, and we shall talk about that at the next Huff meeting.
Yes. So, but, you know, also just, I mean, to get an answer out of Mike, about the specific questions, you have to have a discussion with him and listen to like various and sundry stories and tales of his adventures.
Well, the real
in the
issue,
adventures.
I think. I mean, it's been proposed, for example, by Attorney Kate Wells. What the city needs is a professional city attorney who isn't just taking on the city as one of the many different contracts, but who's actually the paid city attorney, and that's their full-time and only job. What was Rotkin and your reaction to that? I mean, did you compare stats from different cities?
Yes,
have you done your homework?
Did.
And
yes,
what have
I
you
did,
found?
And he seemed to feel that it's cost-effective relative to other cities.
I know how he feels, but what did you find, independent researcher?
Well, apparently the county, for example, has 14 attorneys and 7 staff members for $1 million. And those, I would believe all those are full-time employees. And
But John, being a superior attorney, does the work of 14 attorneys. And
well, his whole firm does the work of 14 attorneys. Now, the actual number of hours they bill amount to 2 attorneys full-time. If you look at John Barasone's letter, they've spent between 2,800 and 3,600 hours on the contracts. So,
it's a little hard for us to kind of pass this on to the audience.
Well, okay, 2,000 hours is one.
Excuse me. The question I really had for you was whether
we're getting 2 attorneys
in
for
looking
the price of 14.
In looking over.
That's
okay,
my
okay.
opinion. That's
looking over other cities, whether other cities and other jurisdictions have a better deal on this, and what was your analysis? What was the bottom line here?
Well,
should we move to a new system, or should we continue to support John and his wife?
I believe that it would be more cost-effective for the city, given the amount of litigation expenses they're incurring, et cetera, to actually have a professional city attorney. I don't think there's really any question about it.
But
now,
Mike,
you might
Rotkin
not save a lot of money,
this.
But
now,
I think
wait a minute,
we would
Uncle
get
Mike
service.
Says no, no, no.
Yes, he does.
And Mike is going to be reelected on the city council, so
yes.
You're shit out of luck there, Levitt.
Well, maybe Christopher Cobb can be persuaded.
That's one of the new city council candidates. Do you have any comments about Christopher Cobb?
Nothing except the latest Bratton column says he's in favor of all the initiatives, including the marijuana initiative.
But has not returned two phone calls from yours truly requesting
he's
come forward
he knew.
On free radio.
Or maybe he's been advised to stay very far away.
Maybe so, yes.
Who knows? Mike Rockin doesn't seem to have that issue. But
wait, this
anyway.
Could be Chris Cobb
I really
calling
need
in.
To go,
all
actually.
Right, Thomas, thank you again. That was Thomas Levitt. And we have a caller. Let's see who's actually on the line. Hi, you're on free radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert. Is Thomas Levitt in the studio with you?
He's sneaking out the door as we speak.
Stop him!
I wish I could, but he has an appointment. He sends his regards.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that I want to change his last name.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
To Levitt.
You love it. You love it when it comes
love
to Levitt.
Love it, love it, love it.
I think that's been done before and by a furniture company.
Well, he's Levitt, not Levitt. But yeah,
is this are you making some overtures to one of our broadcasters on the air here?
It's the kind of love that you feel for God.
Oh, all right. So this is a theological overture.
It's not the eros. It's the agape.
I see. We're not getting carnal here. We're getting celestial.
I just have a lot of thankfulness, and
okay.
I love Thomas Levitt. He's a good guy, and
well,
I love it.
Then you can call him up and tell him of your affection on Sunday when he comes back.
Sunday morning,
7:30
I'll try
and
to wake
30.
Up early enough.
All right, then.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, and I love you too, Robert.
I would hope so.
Robert Norris, I have to think of something. I'll think of something.
You better.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Phone line's open, 427-3772, and it's your chance to call in. Another quick comment on the tape we were listening to, which is from an outdoor protest on July 9th around the L.A.'s police destruction, L.A. Sheriff's destruction of the urban garden down there, and also concurrent events happening in Santa Cruz, like a city council move a successful move to repress, give great power to the Parks and Rec chief, to set up a law, which you may have seen mentioned in today's Good Times, I believe, and possibly in the Sentinel, about triple fines on Halloween if you're engaging in such criminal behavior as open container, that sort of thing. And what impressed me about this protest was that, first of all, there were They took to the streets. They took the streets. They marched all the way down to the area where the Asian Rose used to be, the courtyard there, and various people spoke, and that's where you're hearing this series of speakers speaking from. But then the next day at City Council, and I think actually it was 2 weeks later, there were a number of people who showed up upset at the power being given to the head of Parks and Rec to essentially arbitrarily and of her at her own initiative set hours without any kind of requirement to take direction from the Parks and Rec Commission, the admittedly appointed but still quasi-public body, which at least the public has some input in. And that's now, of course, the law. And actually, this is a broad law that allows, it's sort of like an anti-terrorism law. It allows an executive official, Danette Shoemaker, to make her own judgments as to what parts of the city run by Parks and Rec should be open at what times. And that's a lot of space, not just your ordinary city parks, it's a lot of other areas too, including the City Hall complex. And I would be really curious to see if she tries to shut down City Hall when there's an all-night protest there, as Mike Rotkin tried to do in 1996 in June, or actually in May of 1996 when he was mayor. A good reason, by the way, not to vote for Mike Rotkin or Cynthia Matthews. So there you are. Continuing with this two-month-old but still pertinent tape.
Tuesday, it's item number 31 on the agenda, but the first 25 or 28 items are so-called consent agenda items, which means they all get passed as one on one vote. So it's hard to say. Anytime after 2, probably after 2:30, and that's what's cooking, items 31 and 33. Quick announcement for those who are interested. If anybody has any questions, I'll be around, so check me out. Thanks. It's also mentioned on indiebay.org in case you want to read more about it after you've left. And you can send them an email saying, you know, forget it. If you feel like it. They're not going to forget it. They're going to press on with it. So we have to find other solutions for dealing with it. And this, for example, what we're doing today is one of those solutions. Thank you.
Hello? There's dumpster food that way. Too hungry.
Elementary school in Watsonville. And, we've decided to start a garden in solidarity with the South Central Farmers with the space has been donated by the school, but there's been no money, no support, other than just here's the ground of packed dirt and go at it. And so with the help of my students and helpers from the community, we'd like to start this garden in solidarity with the South Central Farmers. We need support of tools, dirt, gardening supplies, seeds, everything.
Mussels, particularly mussels.
So if anybody would like to talk to me afterwards about anything that they can provide, or would like to talk about coming to a work party tomorrow from 3 to 6 at the school, it would be great. It's an urban school. It's completely cement except for this small little patch of dirt. There's like a tree in the garden, and we need help. Tomorrow, 3 to 6, Maxwell Elementary School. I've got literature and I've got a list of things that could be donated and need to be donated in order to make it work.
What's the address?
Talk to me afterwards if you'd like directions to get there or can start a carpool.
Next to the metro station.
It's right across the street from the metro station in downtown Watsonville.
What connections do you make with people who live down there?
Most of the connections we made so far have been with people who have walked through the alley and watched us working in the dirt. We've met this guy, Adan, from the UFW, who does security for the UFW and wants to donate plants and seeds. And it's a kind of a partnership with the UFW office, which is down the street. Yeah. Support would be awesome. Any questions? Anybody bring anything to donate today? We got some sprouts and some plants over there. Yeah? Mussels. Uh-oh. I think that beeping sound was the battery dying.
Yeah, I think it's the battery overheating. Or the strip. And, like, feeding myself, my friends, and anyone else who's interested.
And I'm just interested in, like, finding a piece of land that's not being used anywhere and just, like, starting to make a garden. And so I wrote down some info right here, and so just put your contact info and your name, and maybe I'll just get back to you or something, and we can get together and, like, look for spots or maybe discuss some possible spots. And I really just, like, I really want to separate myself from, like, using a store to get my food, and I'm really interested in, like, having autonomous food production and distribution. And so, like, I feel like the land is there, and so all we need to do is just put the energy into it. And so I'd be really down for talking to people about that. So, yeah, just the paper is here, and just, like, I'll put my email address on there so you can email me or you can talk to me after this thing or whatever. So, yeah, that's the heads up.
All right. And the email address is nok@riseup.net.
I don't currently live in Santa Cruz anymore, but I have a plot in the Tuscany Gardens. It's up on Tuscany Street off of Mission. And I gave it to a friend of mine, Clarice. I don't know if she's here.
I know where that
is. No, Clarice is, yeah. And I just recently went by it the other day, and it's totally full of weeds. And I mean, it's a big plot. It's about a 20 by 25 foot space. I'm going to catch my breath here. It's totally open. She needs help. It's like a 10-minute walk right here. It's being paid for every year by I forgot her name. Anyway, it's covered. And I guess she just needs help on it. And you know, if you guys are you know, put your talk into into your walk, it's totally there. And if you want to put some effort into it and build it up as you say you guys want to, you know, talk to her, and I'm sure she'd love your help, and, you know, consolidate and everything. So it's open and free for you guys to take it, so that's all I have to say.
All right.
And she's, like, down to other people to come and help and, like, harvest.
Extremely needed, actually. She hasn't even networked. I told her to, but...
There's also a workshop tomorrow, if anybody's interested, in front of City Hall from 3 to 6 on surviving the downtown ordinances. So laws that make it illegal to chalk on the sidewalk, make it illegal to sit down next to a building, make it illegal to have a political table for more than an hour downtown. We're going to be doing a tour of shame. We're going to be doing a How to Make a Public Records Act request. We're going to be hearing a history of anti-homeless laws. It's going to be... might be fun. 3 to 6 in front of City Hall tomorrow. It's called Surviving the Downtown Ordinances.
And actually, we didn't do the tour of shame and didn't talk too much about Public Records Act requests. We did do a history of anti-homeless shenanigans and had an interesting turnout. That was for the free school, which hats off to Wes Modes and the free school and all the folks associated with it. You're listening to an older tape. Some of the laws that have been passed continue to be selectively enforced. As you heard, Swami, the fellow who sits near the coffee roasting company, talked earlier about the notorious CSO, Community Service Officer, Pam Bechtel, coming up to him and advising him that he couldn't have somebody sitting with him because that was illegal and that he would be cited for it if she saw him again. Which, of course, I pointed out is completely fictionary in her mind. But unfortunately, her mind is attached to a roaming body which has a ticket book. And she's done this kind of thing before. Of course, she usually intimidates people without actually issuing tickets and without actually having to make up stories in court or appear in court and get them to justify what she does. But in fact, as I mentioned before, there's a law that I suppose she could enforce about panhandling, which does not allow you to have your small infant with you when you're panhandling, or your wife or your friend or two women for support. That's illegal. But it has nothing. It says nothing about a person sitting on a blanket giving out religious advice, unless they're specifically soliciting for money. And that was not claimed by him, which he explained to her, but she nonetheless continued to falsely advise him. And That really pisses me off, that we allow this kind of abusive behavior by officials in uniform to go on day after day, night after night, week after week, and they get paid to do it, smugly, arrogantly, and routinely. It's just not good policy, folks. Continuing with the protest against the closing of the L.A.'s urban garden, the L.A. farm.
Day by day. For people who don't know, they did bring in bulldozers the morning after 4th of July at 6 a.m. And they bulldozed about half of the gardens that day until the actions of about a dozen or so protesters stopped the bulldozer. One person stuffed an 18-inch zucchini into the tailpipe. Some other people threw some fencing underneath the tread of the bulldozers. They had to stop that day, but they did bring in bulldozers the next 2 days. And as of a day or two ago, the only thing left standing at the garden were a few trees. They did bulldoze the crops. However, one thing that's amazed me throughout this thing is the faith and the hope of the campesinos that work on this farm. And there was a great quote by one on the other day that said, you know, it's still dirt and we can still make things grow. You know, I mean, these people are far from giving up on this struggle. There's been a lot of press that's kind of said this is over, this is a done deal. But there was also a lot of press on the 13th when they evicted everybody that said the same thing, that said this was a done deal, that this was over. So the media tends to say that this is over and people should give up. But a big date to watch is this Wednesday, July 12th. There's a court date that's challenging the sale from the city of Los Angeles to Ralph Horowitz, saying that it was done for way too cheap. It was done without public knowledge and without public bidding. So that's one potential avenue that the people are pursuing down there. Either way, even if Horowitz does clear the land and begins trying to build a warehouse down there, people are going to make it hell for any company who wants to come in and use this warehouse. They do need some help down there. Anybody who feels like going down there, there's a great community of people down there that take care of each other. They're talking about starting a South Central Farm Collective down there. I spent about a month out of the last month and a half down there myself, and I feel like I'm family down there. So if you know, you shouldn't have any worries about food, about too much money. People take care of each other down there. So if you feel like going down there, you should check it out. There's some really amazing people doing some really amazing things down there. But watch out for the court date on Wednesday. And know that as of 2 weeks ago, I think Walmart and American Apparel were the two largest bidders for the warehouse for that property. So keep those companies in mind if it does go to the point where there's a warehouse. So any questions, you can talk to me.
And looking on indiebay.org LA or la.indiemedia.org on what was happening around that time on July 12th, as mentioned by this guy, attorneys for the farmers and the attorneys for the Horowitz and the city made their opening statements to Judge Helen Bendix. The attorneys for the farmers, Dan Stromer, laid out the basis of the farmers' case that the land was not legally sold to Horowitz by the city. First, the conditions for resale of the land by the city as outlined in the initial terms were not met, and so forth. You can follow some of that on la.indiemedia.org. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hi.
It's Warren.
Hey, is it you or is this your dummy talking?
Nah, this is me, but I can't hear you very good.
Well, how about now?
That's a little better.
Yeah, just try to put the phone real close to your ear. I mean, I've had this problem before. I'm not quite sure what the reason for it is.
Yeah, well, I can't get it any closer than what it is.
Okay. Well, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you better now.
Okay. So I announced earlier, Warren, that you were calling in because of a little encounter you had with a police officer involving your disabled, I didn't actually announce all this, but I mentioned you'd be calling in a problem around your disabled placard and your vehicle.
Yeah, I ended up getting a ticket.
Uh-huh.
And the ticket was because I was parked at a meter, and the meter didn't have any money in it. And that was at meter, let me see here, it's, P952.
And where was that?
Downtown.
Where?
More
or less.
Oh, yeah, PACIF Pacific Avenue. It's where the, close to the card room.
Close to the card room on Pacific Avenue, up near Laurel Street.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So your vehicle, and you have a, you had a disabled placard.
Yeah, I have a disabled placard hanging on my mirror like it's supposed to be.
Uh-huh. And yet you got a citation. So that, theoretically,
yeah,
as I understand it, that means you're not supposed to get tickets?
That's correct.
Okay.
If you have a placard, you can park at any meter without having to put any money in it. And at the where your disabled signs are.
Gotcha.
Well, anyway, I got the ticket.
How
and I called this Ted Denzel.
Ted Denzel?
D-O-N-E-L-L-E-Y.
Again, what's the name? Denzel?
Yeah, D-O-N-E-L-L-E-Y.
Donald.
But I also called him, I called him the first time. I didn't call him once. I called him twice here.
And who is he, anyway?
He's Park Services he's Park Services specialist,
what?
I guess.
What is Fox Services?
People take care of the tickets nowadays. You don't go to court.
I see. So you attempted to get him to dismiss this ticket?
Yeah.
And
no, wait a minute. No, he's not the one. He's not Fox City.
It doesn't matter. The names.
Information.
Excuse me. It's not important. His name. The names at this particular point are not important. But you called to try to get the ticket dismissed.
Yeah. Well, I told him. I said, look, I just got a parking ticket here. I gave them a copy of my placard and my license, and I said, why am I getting a ticket? He said, oh. Somebody came out of the card room and said the car was theirs, but they had borrowed the placard. I went, well, wait a minute. I never let anybody use it. It's my car. I said, either you're covering somebody up or you're lying to me. One of the two, trying to cover up the officer that gave the ticket the wrong way.
Now, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Slow down. I'm not quite clear to understand. So the man who you asked to dump this ticket said... And you asked him why the ticket happened, and he told you that someone came out of the card room and said that...
It was their car.
It was their...
They borrowed the placard.
But in fact, it was your car and your placard?
And my placard.
And did he identify this person?
No.
And did he say that this person had come up to the, what, the parking meter attendant or something, or made a complaint?
Yeah, at least that's what I gathered.
You know, that sounds rather unusual. Why would he make that admission to anybody, even if it were true? I mean, why would he say that?
I don't know, but that was the reason he gave, because I got the ticket.
And was that actually on the ticket? I mean, was it written down so that he was reading from
that?
Well, how did he know that?
Well, I guess he had asked the person that wrote the ticket.
And did you ever get the name of the person who wrote the ticket?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
So, a couple of days later, I took it over to the mayor's office right at 1 o'clock when they reopened for lunch, and there was a gal there, and she came around the corner and said, can I help you? I said, yeah, I got this ticket, and I don't understand this. How come I got a ticket on my car, and I have a handicap sticker on it? I mean, a handicap placard. So she said, well, that's probably a mess up. I'll call this guy. So she called him, and I could hear her go, well, that's what I was told, but, you know, kind of laughing about it. And then...
And what was her name? What was her name?
I don't know. I didn't get her name.
Okay. She was in the mayor's office? Or?
Yeah, mayor's office.
Uh-huh.
Well, she come out, and she said, well, no, what happened was somebody was putting money in the meter, and that's why they issued the ticket. And I'm going...
Wait a minute.
But she said...
Hold it. Someone was putting money in the meter.
Yeah, money in the meter.
Well, that's legal to do it. It's not illegal to put money in someone's meter. Or if it is, ever since Mr. Twister embarrassed the city, I thought they had changed the law. So you can, in fact, walk up to a meter maid who is about to give somebody a ticket and put money in the meter right in front of her and say, essentially, fuck off, leave this person alone.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I hadn't heard about it. It's the first time I've heard about it. But she also stated that, but the ticket's going to get dismissed in the interest of justice. And you should get a letter in a couple of days. Well, lo and behold, a couple of days later, I got a letter. And it states here that person in possession of vehicle at the time of the ticket. Well, basically what they're saying is that was not his. The placard was not his.
But the vehicle was?
Well, they don't say that. It just says dismissed in the interest of justice.
Now, did this, have you lent your vehicle to anybody else?
No, nobody drives my vehicle, and I do not let anybody use my placard.
What kind of a vehicle is it?
It's a Chrysler New Yorker.
Say that again?
It's a Chrysler New Yorker. And 85 Chrysler New Yorker.
85, is it like in good shape, in bad shape?
Yeah, but there's no dents in her, but she does need a paint job. She's a gray.
Are there any unusual stickers on it of any kind? Or?
The only thing that's unusual, this has a vinyl top, and I took the vinyl off because it was all cracked and messed up, and now it's just like black.
Has anybody, you know, have you experienced any kind of criticism of your vehicle? Or
no.
You know, I mean,
I only been here for 2 weeks when I got the ticket.
And you, but what about you? Do you think your dummy is behind this? Could he arrange
no,
this to embarrass
so.
You?
I mean, I never got a ticket when I was in Costa Mesa.
Uh huh.
I never got a ticket in Costa Mesa. Never even nowhere near. But what's comical about this is it continues.
Go ahead.
So a couple of days after that, I went to the city hall, and I got a hold of Matt
Farrell.
Farrell.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't in, but I was complaining about it, and because of my voice carries a lot, one of the guys in the back that's a, what do I call them, people that design things?
Planner?
Architect. He was an architect in the back.
Okay.
And he came out and said, well, can I help you? And I said, yeah, this is the problem, and this is what I got. So he gave me his card. He says, can I have a copy of that so I can show him? I said, yeah. He took it back, took a copy of this thing that they sent me, and he said, well, he'll get a hold of you. He had called me that day and said, well, I can't talk about it right now, but how about giving me until Wednesday about 3 o'clock? I said, yeah, no problem. He said, call me back then. So I did. But before I called him, I had called this guy back. This Ted...
Matt Farrell?
Yeah, Ted Farrell back
Matt
maybe
Farrell.
1 o'clock.
You're talking about Ted Donnelly or Matt Farrell?
Ted Donnelly.
Okay.
And he said, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I says, I don't even have... why you got the ticket on the computer yet, and it doesn't say anything about what happened to the ticket. Now, it didn't say it was dismissed in the interest of justice on there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So when I called, when Matt finally called me back, Matt Danzer, Matt...
This is the architect guy?
Yeah, no, this mm-hmm. is the manager of Park and...
Matt Farrell.
Yeah, Matt Farrell called me back, and he goes, well... I called Ted Dancer, and he said that the car wasn't yours, and somebody had borrowed the placard. I said, well, that ain't what happened. He said, well, that's what I was told, and there really ain't nothing to do about it. You got it dismissed. What are you worried about? So it seems to me that even people that have placards get tickets. And I have a feeling I know what happened. I know exactly what happened in this case.
And what happened?
Because a couple of days before I got the ticket, I was at a coffee shop that used to be a house. It's pretty prevalent downtown, but it's about a block over. And I was sitting there when I first got here because I just got through getting all this senior citizen stuff and so forth. And I was going through the paperwork, and my car was parked right in front of me. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder. He says, "Is that your car? Because you're getting a ticket." And I went, looked up, and what? The little meter cart was there, and the gal was out, and she already had her machine out, and she's punching in my license plate number. And I looked at her, and I said, "What are you doing?" And she went, "Well, I'm giving this car a ticket because the meter's out." And I looked at her, I went, "Don't you think you should check the windshield first?" She says, "Well, I ain't got there yet."
Right.
You know, with that kind of an attitude, even if she sees it on there after she's already got the ticket made out, she's going to go to heck with it and put it there anyway. If I wouldn't have been there.
Wow.
This would have been the second ticket I would have gotten.
And how far away was this from where you got the first ticket?
No, this happened before I got the ticket.
I'm sorry, before you got the... But how far away...
Yeah, I've only gotten one ticket.
How far away was this from where that happened?
Let's see, maybe one block over and about four blocks down.
Mm-hmm.
You know the house in Santa Cruz that is a coffee shop?
Are you talking about Cafe Pergolisi?
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was there. When I saw this happen, I'm going, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? And I'm thinking, hey, watch, somebody's going to give me a ticket on my car.
Did she apologize to you?
No. She got back in her little cart and took off.
What was her name?
I have no idea.
What did she look like?
She had, like, not blonde hair, but between blonde and gray.
Uh-huh.
And she was maybe 35, 40.
Heavy, light?
A little on the heavy side. But I don't know who she was.
So you say you got a second ticket after that first ticket that you got?
No, I only got one ticket. I almost got a first ticket.
I got you.
That day, two weeks after I got here.
Now, has this interfered with you and your dummies' dialogues on the mall?
No, when I work, George, I deal mostly with children and women, and I try not to offend anybody.
Now, where do you usually do your shtick? Where can people see you?
I'm usually downtown, and I'm just before the theater on the opposite side.
Okay.
I'm usually in that general area.
Which theater, the Del Mar or the Cinema 9?
The Cinema 9.
Well, I just want to say that it's ever since the parking tickets became an administrative process, it's extremely hard to get a court hearing on her. It's a more complicated process. You have to post bail money. I mean, in theory, if you did this, if you were charged with a criminal infraction, let's say sleeping on the sidewalk or, I don't know, not moving every hour with your dummy.
Yeah.
Have you been hassled about that?
No.
Oh, good. Well, they can't.
I've had a couple of police come by me. They don't say a thing. In fact, they like what I do.
Well, good. But in fact, if they want to, they can hassle you, which is unfortunate. They shouldn't be able to. But let's suppose, you know, that you got hassled for that improperly. They wrote you the wrong ticket, and they said, well, we're going to dismiss it in the interest of justice. But the next thing you knew, you heard that the same phony story was going around, that apparently... And I will probably ask Matt Farrell about this, too, because I occasionally talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, and you wanted to go to court to clear your reputation, let's say. You could do what you call request a declaration of factual innocence, which is sort of an unusual procedure where you have to show by a preponderance the evidence that you were not guilty of the crime.
Right.
And then they say, oh, you're factually not guilty. You know, I mean, you know, you're factually innocent. But it's hard. I think it would be even harder to do with this administrative process. And I mean, I'm glad you're letting us know this. I don't know what to tell you to do other than work it into your routine with what's his name, George?
Yeah. No, that's not George. That's Dr. Moody.
I'm sorry, Dr. Moody.
George is my first one. He's already retired.
Your smaller associate on the street there.
Yeah.
Your dummy.
Well, the problem I'm having is it seems that they kind of dismiss it in the interest of justice a little quick. And all the information, until I've got all the information, is probably on the computer now, but it wasn't all the way through this procedure. And it seems to me that they are not willing to say, Mr. Moore, we apologize. We shouldn't have gave you the ticket.
Oh, definitely.
But we're dismissing it on the interest of justice. That's not what they're saying. They're still blaming me.
Right. Well, actually, in the interest of justice is a way of avoiding saying that they had inadequate evidence.
That's not good enough for
and
me.
And it isn't even inadequate evidence. It's not just lack of probable cause. It is a complete fuck-up.
Yeah.
Is what it
and
was.
And you're afraid to admit it.
Right. So, I mean, that's established. I mean, one sees this repeatedly with, you know, I'm not saying it always happens with the police or even in a majority of the cases. But when it does happen, the problem is how do you get, you know, some kind of satisfaction? And the answer is, I suppose, I would outline the whole thing in a letter and send it off to Farrell and say, I'm looking for an apology. And I would also itemize any expenses that you incurred throughout this. I think I talked to you about this before. And then you can file a claim against the city for the money. And even though this sounds like a pretty ponderous thing, I mean, I doubt you lost a lot of money around this.
No.
But, you know, it sounds like it's onerous, it's abusive. I'd also write a letter to the Santa Cruz Urinal, which calls itself the Sentinel, of course. The local paper, and tell them, you know, that. And I would say, and you could, what you might also do is you might make a display for your, you know, for your, I'd say work it into your act. Would be the, you know, comedy is the best revenge on this shit. I mean, just.
Well, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I'm gonna dive in a little bit further into this and find out what can.
You do that, and give us.
I want them to admit they're wrong.
Give us a call back. Yeah, give us a call back when you got more information, and keep us posted.
Yeah, I'll do that.
All right. All right, we've been talking with
Warren Moore.
Hey, Warren. Thanks for calling in.
Puppet Master.
The Puppet Master.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Warren.
All right, you guys, welcome. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. And that's a guy I see on the street who does a little ventriloquism act. And apparently, if his account is accurate, can't even get a simple apology and keeps getting the same story being sent around. Of course, now he may be a complete liar. So, you know, who knows what the story is. You've got stories you want to call in and talk about shady business, inappropriate official conduct. Definitely want to hear about it. And you can do that, 427-3772. Again, looking on, getting back to South Central Farmers in L.A., I can't really tell you the complete outcome of the, I don't think they were successful, the South Central Farmers, I don't really know whether they were successful or not in claiming that the farm was inappropriately sold. But there's an interesting series of articles. There was there's a question, was the destruction of South Central Farms a crime? Those who bulldoze crops of South Central Farm in LA may be guilty of a crime, according to the California State Penal Code 604. And sort of it sounds like a theoretical discussion. Then there was, I think, a benefit that was held. South Central Farmers and International Support is prepared for a judge to rule on the facts. This was July 19th. There was a press conference. Daryl Hannah apparently was involved, the actress Daryl Hannah. And let's see here if there was actually any information. Not quite clear what the actual outcome was. Committee members Stanley Scheinbaum, the former head of the LA Police Commission, Rabbi Stephen Jacobs, Daniel Sokach, executive director of the Progressive Jewish Alliance, Marcy Weingrade, chair of the Progressive Democrats of L.A., and Stephen Rode, former chair of Southern California ACLU, are calling for a fair resolution for the farmers and to use this issue to bring attention to Los Angeles' commitment to a healthy, livable city. We are here to see that farmers get back on this land, which they nurtured and developed so devotedly. Bishop Marvin Bernheim, a religious leader in South Central, has been supporting the farm for 14 years. And elected representative, farm representative Rufina Juarez will call for Judge Bendix's ruling on the side of justice. This is a press conference on July 20th that they announced. And let's see if there's any info about what happened after that. Hmm. story, Youth Targeted for Repression. Three youth in the above picture are being systematically targeted by police agencies. They were the young people who stopped the bulldozer at South Central Farm with a zucchini. A pretty long zucchini, it looks like. The state may be taking great offense from such an attack. They were beaten up by the police at the last minute Minso rally in Hollywood on July 4th. Police did not arrest them. They just beat them up, all four of them. They've also made their personal information available to the Minutemen. Have been targeted only by the police, but by hate groups of the Minutemen. We need to applaud their courage and principles. Then there was a South Central Farm live concert on July 24th. And there's actually you can download the concert. Zach de la Rocha, Son de Madera, Los Cojolites, Quetzal, and more. And again, I'm looking on the LA Indie Media website. And judge to rule in San Francisco Farm case this Wednesday. And apparently she's going to announce her decision on the 26th. It was delayed. And the next article doesn't look good. A mockery. Apparently this is the article about the decision. The judge's argument that the farmland was sold to Horowitz at roughly fair market value is a mockery on its face. As far back as 1994, the city sold the land to the Harbor Department for more than twice the amount the judge called fair market value. That's 9 years before it was resold to Horowitz. If the market value of the land decreased by roughly $8 million over a 9-year period, it will be a first in LA history. For more details, see the link in excerpt below. And so apparently the judge ruled that it was okie dokie for the farms to be sold to Horowitz for a song, it sounds like. Then support needed for South Central activists in L.A. This is a story from September, and actually from August, August 15th. On July 5th of this year, 10 courageous environmental activists took direct action in an attempt to stop the destruction of the South Central Farm. Their actions were nonviolent, yet they received injuries from the police violence. Now they're facing excessive charges from the LADA. The hearing for three of these defenders of the farm began this Thursday. And supporters of the fight to take back South Central Farm are asked to attend the hearing to show support. Farm defender one is accused of misdemeanor trespassing and one misdemeanor vandalism. Another one is two counts of it, of trespassing, one count of vandalism, four counts of trespassing for the fourth, three counts of resisting arrest, one count of destruction of property, and so forth and so on. And so there's some fallout around this. People who resisted the city's bulldozing of this, and apparently four of them at least got beaten, and a number of others got charged. And the update is Tuesday, September 5th, 8:30 a.m. is the court date for the arrestees, or was. The police brutality that Michael Sinson was victim to on that day was witnessed by many people. The charges he's facing are outrageous, trumped-up charges which seek to criminalize and railroad those working-class youth of color. And you can read more about this. And these are all, they sound like, well, the people involved are Ollie Enrique, Martha Escudero, Sarah Sage, Stephen Murphy, Luigi Pedrig, Robert Fofrich, Yolanda Carlin, and Jordan Murray, and historian Michael Sinson. And apparently there's an L.A. cop watch, too, which is trying to keep an eye on the LAPD, which is apparently quite, I would imagine, quite a task. So, a little bit more of the Santa Cruz's response in trying to both support South Central Farm people and to look for open space and to support our own right to use public spaces in Santa Cruz. A little more of that tape.
600 feet, and it's like a bike ride away. And it's already plowed and stuff, because I guess they plow it every year for fire reasons. And it's totally feasible, and I found access to a water source there. And so it's a really huge fucking place. Like, it can feed probably, I don't know, 1,000 people. And we could probably make, like, a garden center or something like that. And the soil looks really healthy. It doesn't look polluted. So, yeah, I don't know. That's just another thing to maybe inspire people to do that.
And also something that comes to mind, too, if American Apparel does move into a warehouse there, I mean, hopefully that's
it will never happen. But somebody said that American Apparel is now downtown. So, you know, people can draw connections and make their appropriate attacks, you know, on targets that are worthy of attack. Also, there's a history here in Santa Cruz, too, of vital spaces being destroyed, demolished for economic reasons. The bigger picture is that economics are valued over people's needs and their desires to create and live a life on our own terms. Over there, there's a pit at North Pacific that used to be a very vital place. There was a space called Wet as Art there, performances, open mics. There's a really wonderful community of creative people that came together there. The Hub was located there long ago. There was a Bulkhead Gallery, a large gallery space that had performances and all kinds of things, and very cheap, too. It was demolished and left vacant for, I mean, it still is. This happened in the late 90s. So, there's a history of this, not just in South Central, but also here that we can see around this particular space itself. I think appealing to the city council is not going to do anything. They don't really care. And basically, I don't want to appeal to people that, I don't want to give them that power, to the illusion that they actually represent me, because they don't. I refuse to abdicate my own personal power to these people. So it's up to us to decide how we want to do things together, whether it's to build community gardens, attack American Apparel. There's all kinds of tactics we can use and come together on without appealing to other authorities to make our lives more plentiful and fulfilling.
So, all right.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, Jim.
So we contacted some folks at South Central Farms. I got through to them this morning, and their media coordinator gave us a solidarity statement for this rally, and hopefully this will work. So just go ahead, and we're going to play that next.
Do you want to say her name?
She says her name.
Get out, 15!
That's not
My it. Name is Lexi Marava. I'm media coordinator, volunteer for South Central Farm. I've been here since the tree sit started with Julia Butterfly and Joe Hanna and John Quigley. As you all know, the farm... There's been an encampment at the farm for a year, and we were kicked out by the sheriff July 13th with over 200 police in riot gear, calling out 45 nonviolent peaceful protesters. What happened over the last few days is the farm got completely bulldozed and almost 100% destroyed by the developer in what we view as a very hostile act of vindication, because the land hasn't even been proven to be his yet in court, so he basically destroyed the farm before we can even get it back. It sort of drove a stake into the heart of the farmers and the supporters that our spirit will not be paved over. We're completely here, as strong as ever. We're gathered around the farm. We're camped out around the farm. We have local churches supporting us, giving us places to sleep and shower. And today is Solidarity Day, and we're so excited that Santa Cruz is on board. We have 25 cities around the world performing actions of solidarity today, from parades to prayer vigils to candle vigils. We have cities in Colorado, the Bay Area, actually starting gardens today, planting community gardens with the farm in mind. So we need everybody, and it's a worldwide effort to raise awareness about urban farming, green living, social and economic justice for the nation's poor, and getting kids off the streets and getting them into the garden and learning about agriculture and independent living. And also organic produce in these communities is something that they just don't have access to unless we're growing our own food. So what's been happening in the last few days is we've been crying a lot and just really striving for forgiveness in our hearts against the bulldozing and the destruction of the farm. There's a couple dozen trees standing inside. And as you know, a farm can be rejuvenated in an instant with the planting of seeds and labor and love. So farm's not over, it's not ruined, it's just been dug under, and that's having a real impact on the area's air quality, and it's way hotter down here now. It's hard for the supporters. We're just really uncomfortable, but we're having a rally today, which you're part of, and we're really grateful, and we send you our love and our hearts from downtown L.A., and we're having a congresswoman, Maxine Waters, Julia Butterfly Hill, our lawyer, and the farmers and the kids all talking out today.
And also the rally went on to talk about, the local rally went on to talk about a lot of local issues, and you heard some of them. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And it's a little far afield and a little dated to continue this tape, though I'd kind of hoped there was more in the way of local stuff, and I believe there is further on the tape, so I'll try to roll it forward. Before I do, however, a couple of stories. This from San Francisco on the Beyond Cron website, for those who like to see sort of a kind of an alternate source of information to the San Francisco Chronicle, which I do continue to read, I admit. But you don't have to buy it to read it. You can read it online. Religious leaders reveal city policy at war with itself, by Casey Mills, September 1st. A coalition of San Francisco's religious leaders joined together today to reveal the results of months of study on the city's homeless policy. The results, they said, depicted an administration simultaneously working to house as many homeless people as possible, I actually doubt that, while criminalizing those they lack the resources to serve. Speakers not only decried the 31,230 quality of life, quote-unquote, citations delivered in the past 2.5 years for behaviors like sleeping outdoors or possessing an open container as spiritually bankrupt, they also pointed out its cost to taxpayers, $5.7 million, and that 80% of the citations were dismissed. In addition, a civil rights lawyer was in hand to show that these citations often prevent homeless people from getting their housing they so desperately need, revealing a city policy working simultaneously to create housing opportunities, then take these opportunities away. It's a policy in the city, a city at war with itself, said Reverend Shulia Rhodes. Religious Witness with Homeless People, a broad interfaith coalition of the city's religious leaders, initiated the study months ago. Headed up by Sister Bernie Galvin, the study sought to unearth the true costs of citing homeless people for quality of life infractions. Religious leaders previously lambasted these citations, which punish various nonviolent behaviors that often come as a result of being homeless, for being a cruel way to treat the city's less fortunate. The results of the study released yesterday, however, add important new critiques of the practice, the fact that it costs taxpayers millions each year, and that it runs directly counter to the Newsom, that's Mayor Gavin Newsom of San Francisco's administration's efforts to house all homeless people. Since January of 2004, the city has spent more than $5.7 million on issuing quality of life citations. According to the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, Elisa Della Piena, the high cost can be traced to a variety of causes, including paying the police officer to give the citation, funding the myriad of expenses of forcing the offender to appear for multiple court dates, and paying officers yet again to testify at these court dates. And just as a sort of an aside here, I have been continuing unsuccessfully to try to get the costs of, or I should say, even before the cost, the record of how many sleeping van tickets have hit the Santa Cruz city courts, how much money have people had to pay, how often were they jailed for them, what kind of community service time did they receive, were they afforded a hearing or a trial, were they found guilty or not guilty. All these questions, which are in the public record, I have been denied access to week after week, month after month, in spite of written requests under Public Records Act to get them. So if anybody's interested in helping with this project, again, I encourage you to jump on the Huff bandwagon or help push the Huff garbage scow and give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group that tries to get the facts and then act on them, at least one set of facts. You can also call the station here if you want to chat about this issue, 427-3772, and continuing at the story by Casey Mills, Religious leaders reveal city policy at war with itself. De La Peña also detailed the fact that more than 80% of these citations are thrown out, proving that the expensive process for doling them out rarely brings any concrete result. When the citations aren't thrown out, however, they can make it far more difficult for the homeless to obtain housing, or as screening processes often check applicants' criminal records. Because the practice conflicts directly with the city's attempt to house its homeless population, Reverend Shulia Rhodes likened it to the disaster that occurred during the construction of the Verrazano Bridge. Workers built the bridge out from opposite sides of New York Bay, only to discover near the completion of construction that the two sides didn't connect. Such, said Rhodes, is the city's homeless policy, with two arms of city government working against each other. We religious leaders are deeply disturbed by the mean-spiritedness of this punitive part of our current policy on homelessness, said Galvin. We come today compelled to speak out once again about this injustice and the subsequent suffering and pain our homeless sisters and brothers endure. Speak out they did, with representatives of the Jewish, Buddhist, Catholic, Protestant, and Buddhist communities all weighing in on the recent study. While they represented a diverse group, their message remained clear. The city must change its citation policy if it wants to consider itself both a moral city and a pragmatic one. The truly shocking thing about the aggressive enforcement of the quality of life citations, said Rabbi Alan Liu, is that it is not only spiritually and morally futile, it is that it has been futile on a practical level, too. Unfortunately, the current administration didn't appear ready to act anytime soon, despite numerous requests made by religious witnesses to meet directly with Mayor Gavin Newsom. He has steadfastly refused, making him the first mayor since the organization was founded to do so. Newsom strikes again. And then something you may have heard from Democracy Now! Or read about in the paper today, Pentagon bans abusive interrogation methods. September 6th, Wednesday, it's actually yesterday's story, Bush admits secret CIA prisons, Iraq executes 27 terrorists, and so forth. Washington, Reuters, forced nudity, hooding, using dogs, conducting mock executions, or simulated drownings were among eight abusive interrogation practices banned under new rules unveiled by the U.S. military on Wednesday. Well, isn't that nice? So now they're beginning to ban torture practices, perhaps because the courts may hold the U.S. military liable. The Pentagon, still facing international criticism over the treatment of Guantanamo prisoners 2 years after the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse scandal, unveiled long-awaited changes to the 1992 Army Field Manual governing interrogation of detainees held by the military. The manual explicitly prohibits torture and cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, but it keeps 16 long-standing interrogation techniques and adds three new ones, said Lieutenant General John Kimmons, Army Deputy Chief of Staff for Intelligence. No good intelligence is going to come from abusive practices, he said. Intelligence obtained under duress, he added, would have questionable credibility and do more harm than good when the abuse inevitably became public. It's also true that torture is not really a very reliable way of getting information because, not speaking as a master torturer, but one who has done a little reading, and maybe too little reading, but I guess I would ask the question, wouldn't you say anything you could think of to save your ass and to get the pain to stop? And wasn't that one of the reasons that torture was, that Star Chamber proceedings in England were stopped, not just because they were injurious to the rights of the individual, but because they simply were ineffective as well. Practices still permitted include rewarding detainees for cooperation, flattery, and instilling fear. Two of the new techniques were the use of a good cop, bad cop approach, and allowing interrogators to portray themselves as someone other than a U.S. interrogator. A third new technique, called separation, can be used only on detainees deemed enemy combatants to keep them away from one another and only with high-level military approval. The Pentagon also issued a directive affirming the detainees designated as unlawful enemy combatants, including accused al-Qaeda and Taliban members, would receive fewer rights than traditional prisoners of war. However, they would for the first time be covered by protections against inhumane treatment contained in Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention, in line with a Supreme Court ruling handed down last June. So, get this straight. For 5 years, suspects have been held in secret prisons or in Guantanamo or wherever with no access to the Geneva Conventions. 5 years. I don't know. It just maybe I'm numb to it myself by now. Don't know. Interrogators may not force a detainee to be naked, perform sexual acts, or pose in a sexual manner, and cannot place hoods or sacks over a detainee's head, which has been done, by the way, at Santa Cruz County Jail, according to people who've been held there. Not regularly, but it has been done. Or use duct tape over the eyes. They may not beat or electrically shock or burn a detainee or inflict other physical pain or sensory deprivation. Is the implication here that this was okay before and has been okay since 1992? They may not use waterboarding, a type of simulated drowning, or perform mock executions. They may not burn detainees or deprive them of necessary food, water, and medical care, and they may not use dogs in interrogations. Photographs and videos from Abu Ghraib showed U.S. personnel posing with naked and hooded prisoners and using dogs to intimidate them. None of the higher-ups have been punished for this, of course. It was all an aberration, right? These rules do not apply, however, to the CIA. President George W. Bush said he was continuing a CIA program for questioning terrorism suspects and noted the agency had an alternate set of procedures for interrogations. Sounds exciting. Stay off those lists. Larry Cox, Amnesty International's USA executive director, said he was pleased to see a direct repudiation of tactics previously approved for use against detainees, although he was still concerned about the expansive definition of unlawful enemy combatant, not to mention people being held by the CIA. Good luck. That was a story today, or actually, it's a Reuters story. Probably it's either from yesterday or today. And it essentially says, gee, we did all this torturing for 5 years, but we're not going to do it anymore unless you're a CIA guy or an unlawful enemy combatant, and then things are a little different. In which case, you won't be reviewable by a court and won't be able to find you. Courts won't be able to know where you are, but hey, let's still spend $50 billion a year on the war on terror and make it clear, be advised, it's, you know, get it straight, the Democrats and the Republicans are vying with each other as to who is the more successful terror-producing, war-on-terror advocate. Because what Democrats are claiming is that Bush is just not an effective war-on-terror warrior. That, you know, his wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are just not pursuing the war on terror effectively enough, that we need to have other measures against the war for the war on terror. And indeed, coming before Congress, Bush is, of course, pushing the right-wing end of this, which is to rationalize and justify after the fact spying, NSA spying, and a whole host of other things which are now about to pass Congress and the Republican majority. But the Democrats are using the same toxic excuses about the need to deal with the evil terrorists as though this were some new phenomenon, some crisis that has suddenly come up, which is in fact created by U.S. foreign policy in the main, and which that issue, the real essential roots of all this, are not being considered or talked about. And of course, what's new with that? Not much, but for those of you who are jumping on Rutkin's bandwagon to run out and support Democratic candidates, you should be aware that you're supporting candidates who are pushing for more war on terror. They want, you know, the U.S. will not withdraw from Iraq, but they will withdraw somewhat from Iraq to safe areas in the Middle East from which they can extend U.S. influence and control. I suppose you might consider that better. I don't know. We have a caller, maybe a potential voter. Who knows? Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Hi.
Hello.
Is this Robert?
It is.
Hey, this is Walt.
Hey, Paul.
No, Walt.
Oh, Walt. Oh, hey, Walt. What's cooking?
Yeah, I was just catching your show. Sounds like a really interesting one. A lot of charged subject.
Well, hey, I'm babbling away as usual. If you have any thoughts you want to pass on to folks, or
well, yeah, it just seems like the current administration or current administrations, if you want to like look worldwide, they didn't really have a real successful war over there in Iraq, and it looks like they're just trying to take it out on the little guy, with all those civilians and everything out there being killed, and all these enemy combatants. And it just seems like their ineffectiveness is driving them to just lash out, you know?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, it's they had their plans and they had their hopes, and it's all kind of falling apart. And the Democrats, of course, were with them, you know, most of the Democrats, or many of the Democrats. And now they're, well, some of the Democrats are continuing to push for military solutions in the Middle East, Hillary Clinton and others. So it's, I don't know, the issue, I mean, I'm talking about these international and national issues, and I am leaping from local to international and national. Maybe we should talk about what
they
we can do.
Yeah. They certainly are connected.
They are, but I'm wondering what we can do locally to deal with it. That's always the, to me, more important than, usually it's more important than reading these articles, which I you know, I find of interest because they piss me off. And, you know, I mean, I'd like to be doing reports from the local jail on this issue, which I don't have a lot of information on, though. You know, I've got people come up to me who were tasered in jail, and they've been on the air. People who have been roughed up by deputies here locally. And the problem is, of course, we don't have any accountability for this kind of stuff here. And that's really something we might have some control or influence over.
As a watchdog group? Or
what's that?
As being, like, watching the police or what?
Well, it's certainly, I mean, watchdog groups are good, but I think that the community can, you know, exert pressure in a variety of ways. I mean, once, when the do-it-yourself, when the first night scandal became exposed and the police department had been spying on a peaceful political group, you know, as minor in a certain sense as it was in terms of the actual amount of damage done, it indicated the tip of the iceberg as to the kind of power the police department thought it could, you know, use. And then it was quite right. It wouldn't be held accountable. I mean, the city manager didn't care. The police chief thought it was fine. The mayor was all for it. And then even when the auditor said, hold it, you can't investigate this by sending in the man, Deputy Chief Vogel, who ordered or authorized the spying to investigate whether the spying was a good idea or not, or was constitutional or legal or appropriate. Even when that was, you know, mentioned by the auditor, still, the new guidelines that were set up were designed by the police department, and they were put in force without any vote from the city council or public hearings. I mean, it's just more of the same.
Well, I don't know too much about that. I just wanted to call in and mention that one piece that I did. It's great to hear your show, Robert.
Well, I thank you for calling in, Walt, and if you got any tidbits, let me know what's happening.
Hey, if I have more to add, I will.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Hey, the lone caller, or actually we've had two so far, so feel free to join the crowd and jump on board. We've only got about 12 minutes left in the show. I got some more stuff I brought with me to read and to pass on, which I will, or somewhat. If I can find it, that is. Let's see here. I think I'm going to give a quick call to Simba Kenyatta and see if we can get a few thoughts from him on, well, what he's running for and why and when he's going to be on the air and so forth. Let's see if we can actually get him to answer here. Hello, Simba?
Yeah.
Hey, Simba, you're on Free Radio. How's it going?
Oh, hey. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, I'm not. I'm swamped.
You're a swamp. But we've only got about 5 minutes, 10 minutes left in the show, so you're not going to be on the hot seat for very long.
Okay.
So you've run for city council before.
Yes.
This is your second race, third race,
second. Fifth?
This is your second race. And why did you decide to run this time? What's the deal?
Well, I think it's about time. Because I have a lot of different kind of ideas, and I think Santa Cruz could use them right now. You know, it's and I'd like to try to at least represent underrepresented people like African Americans and to try to make some inroads with Latin Americans, with Latinos, because right now I think African Americans and Latinos are being stuck against each other politically. You know, these ruling class people want to make sure that we stay apart, which is another reason I'm running, because I want to start an organization. I want to start us being organized. I'm trying to get, say, the minorities, we're called, you know, African-American people, women, people of color.
Let me ask you, Simba, yes. What's the minority scene in Santa Cruz? What 1% of the population is black, and what, maybe 10% or 12, 15% is Latino? I'm not sure. What are the figures, you know?
Well, see, that's what I'm trying to say, is that we have to stop thinking of ourselves as minorities, you know, because we're not minorities. White people are minority in California right now. So Latinos aren't minorities, and that's one reason I want to get these, quote, minorities together. Women, poor people, people of color, you know, gay, lesbian people.
A rainbow coalition, so to speak?
A little differently, because the Rainbow Coalition only had a domestic agenda, and I intend on this organization eventually becoming international, because it is about social change that everybody can relate to.
But what about local issues? I mean, it's all very well to
I'd like to see
statements, you know. But
like I said, I like to represent, you know, African American people here. But I think some of the local issues, like the K, you know, for the low priority for marijuana, the quarter cent sales tax, which, you know, Santa Cruz is one of the few places that seems to understand the correlation between taxes and services. So hopefully, then we'll pass this quarter cent sales tax and won't have to do a lot of budget cutting.
Let me ask you some questions that other people are not likely to ask you. Although, again, we're hoping to get you on the air for a longer period of time. Is that a possibility?
Yeah.
And you think maybe next Thursday might be the time for that?
I have to look at my schedule, because right now we're getting really, really swamped, which is, you know.
Well, I will say you are at least the first candidate we've had on the phone here on this show, so that's something. But, you know, I mean, catchphrases like African-American, Latino, coalition, I've noticed there's some African-Americans in town.
This isn't just about African-American. This is not about people.
No, but, I mean, people who are African-American and Latino may face special discrimination because of their skin color, no?
What do you mean special discrimination?
Well, in terms of how they're treated by the police, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, is that an issue for you or not? I mean, do you feel that we've ended police discrimination against people of brown and black skin color here in Santa Cruz?
No, of course not.
Well, I don't know. I mean, some would say we have. And Mike Rotkin might say, hey, you know, everything is pretty rosy. If there's a problem, we'll deal with it. I mean,
I'm not into talking against somebody. If you want to talk to me about something, that's cool. But I don't want to deal with somebody else what they said.
Well,
it works that way.
On the other hand, if you're talking about the current city council and its policies, I mean, its current city council voted to kill the Citizens Police Review Board.
Well, see, that's one reason that I'd like to. Well, I'm doing some research now just to find out just how much money the city of Santa Cruz paid out from police misconduct.
Right.
You know, because if they paid out what I think they did, which is more than $150,000, then it's counterintuitive to not have a police review board, because that only costs $90,000. And if people could complain to that instead of having the city pay out, it would save money. So not having a police review board really is not even doesn't even make fiscal sense.
On the other hand, because we want to be fair about this, you observed the rather lame duck, crippled police review board that we had. It went from 1995 to 2002. They had the power to subpoena the police, but they didn't use it once. I
can't speak on that, and I am not.
I can. I went to their meetings.
I'm not running just to get a police review board. Matter of fact, I haven't even mentioned a police review board.
You just did.
I haven't even talked about
that
yet.
You just did.
That's not one of my first issues.
Well, what is your first issue?
My first issue is to get people safe. I think this gang warfare is about to erupt, and people have no idea what they're about to walk into. You know, and
well, how about martial law, suspending the Constitution, and giving the police more powerful weapons? Would that be a good approach?
Oh, I love that one. Yeah, sure. We need to do that often. No, man. No, I don't think so. I'm talking about getting these gang members together and learning how to act other than like gang members. Mm-hmm. You know, like for one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to start and have started registering what they call gang members to vote. Because I think if they have a stake in the town, they may act a little differently about, you know, how they feel about this town. So I think including people, and that's why I'm talking about, you know, my quote minorities, unquote, is that the issue of inclusion is one of my main issues. I want everybody to feel included. I would like to have the downtown merchants and, quote, street people sit down and talk to each other instead of through the city council, because that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well,
you need to sit on calls like, you know,
I got to tell you, we tried that.
Like, you know, they feel like that just because the merchants and shoppers have money that they have more rights.
Why should they bother to talk to each other if the merchants have all the power to start with?
But see, they don't have all the power. That's
explain
why.
Explain to me how they don't.
It's going on and on and on.
I mean, you mentioned
it never gets.
Wait a minute. You mentioned the downtown ordinances in the Good Times article that was written about you last week. You recall that article?
Yeah, but no, I didn't talk about downtown ordinances.
You're quoted on the downtown ordinance. I can read it to you if you want.
Sure, please.
I'll get it online as we're speaking, though. I'm running out of time. You said the downtown ordinances should be looked at.
Yes.
You know, and I guess, you know, the downtown ordinances were passed, in essence, by, you know, merchants under Neil Coonerty, who wanted to remove the unsightly homeless from the downtown area.
Well, we have to stop people that have money from making rules. Like, you know,
how are we going to do that?
John Stuart Mill, you know, this man is.
How are we going to do that?
He talked about how
Simba,
the ruling class makes law.
How are we going to do that, Simba?
First of all, stop interrupting me.
I am.
Second of all,
I want to know how to do it.
We do that by sitting down and talking about what we need to do instead of just passing laws over people and stuff that don't even make sense and that alienates people. We need to stop doing that. We need to start talking to each other as human beings with some respect. And I think once we start doing that, that things will end. You say, why do the merchants have to come to the table? Well, for one thing, if we get some people on the city council that have that in mind, then I don't think it'll be that much trouble. Because if the city council asks merchants to come to the table and they don't, that's not going to make the merchants look very good. So I think
it's on us,
the city council people, to make sure the merchants come to the table.
Simba, they did ask. The reason I'm interrupting you is because I'm aware of some of the things that happened. You probably are too.
Mm.
In 2002, when the downtown ordinances were made worse, and they expanded the forbidden zones from 6 feet to 14 feet.
Mm-hmm.
They invited the merchants to come to the table, and for one, this is Emily Riley's bullshit, frankly. She brought the merchants to the table, and they sat there in these little discussion groups, just like you suggested, and then the next time, nobody came to the table because the merchants knew they were going to get everything they wanted from Emily Riley, Ed Porter.
Then it takes city council people that will stay on it and make sure that this comes out right, because we can't just go, okay, well, we tried it once, and it kind of didn't work, so I don't know what we're going to do. No, it's kind of like,
I know what we're going to do. I know what I would like to see done. I'm wondering what you want to see done. When you suggest,
I told you what I want to see
bringing
done.
The merchants to the table is what you suggest.
That's what I said.
Okay.
You know, that is a problem that, you know, that people, the ruling class seems to think money people, capitalist people seem to think because they have money that they have more rights. And that's nowhere near right. And we have to make sure that as city council people, that we keep bringing that out. You know, you can't, like I said, you can't just do it once and think it's done. We have to keep doing things and putting things out in front of citizens until they get either pissed off enough or interested enough or whatever it takes for them to come down and say, okay, this isn't just a merchant's town. This is all of our town.
Simba,
but they need somebody to speak for them, the people that aren't the merchants.
I don't disagree with you, but I mean, you know, I'm really interested in cutting to the substance from the rhetoric. I mean, you know me. I want to see what the actual concrete proposals are. And I'm hoping that in a future conversation, you know, because you've already said you're going to look into how much money is spent by the police department on these on lawsuits and whether that wouldn't a better use of that money might be any number of things, and one of which might be a police review board, which we've tried, didn't work too well. But, you know, it was at least trying. You know, they were trying to do something. I would love to see you on the air again, and I've also written, or to hear you on the air again, and I know that that there's did you ever get to the Indie Bay website where this show is announced?
No, right? I haven't had time to do that.
Check it out, because for people who are interested, I've posted, and I guess Steve Argue has also posted some comments about your candidacy. We don't know much about it yet, because you haven't yet revealed your 15 major position papers, which you no doubt will do. And you know, anything that you've got, that you've written about, or even just thoughts you have about ongoing activity that you've seen in the last few years, even if you don't get elected, it's not important. The important thing is that you present what you know, what you've learned, what you think is the best alternatives for us to look over.
Well, I do think it's important that I get elected, because I do want to represent people that are underrepresented. Like I said, poor people, people of color, women, gay, lesbian, people that are minorities, people that are picked on. I think it's time for us to finally get together and learn how to not be picked on anymore, you know? Have a little teeth to what we deal with and how we deal with things. That is another story, though.
And you're going to be talking about that in detail perhaps next week on the air.
Yes, about the organization I'm going to start after.
How can people get in touch?
Beyond Politics.
How can people get in touch with you, Simba?
You can do my email at skenyatta@cruzio.com. skenyatta@cruzio.com.
Hey,
I'm glad to answer people's questions, and I do intend on getting on the Indie Bay and seeing what I can put on to get out of it and put into it.
Hey, I appreciate it, Simbanet. Thanks for your patience, and I'll be interrupting you more in the future, and hopefully you can interrupt me back.
No problem, Robert.
Hey, thank you.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.
Later.
That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up next, it's a musical journey to the past with Uncle Dennis, from the Cream to the Dregs. You'll be swimming through little-known or perhaps very well-known territory, depending on what selections he graces us with tonight. Check me out again on Sunday morning, 9:30, and perhaps you can tune in a little early. You'll check out the Wake Up Call with Thomas Levitt at 7:30 in the morning, where I'll be passing him some old archival tapes, rare and exciting. Until then, give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF if you'd like, and check out Uncle Dennis coming up.
I'm the seeker of your sleep, blot it down. Into your dead-eyed vision, making love all over your ceiling, splashing on the wall. And I love you best of all. You rule this land with me. I'm the seek of that pain.
I'm the seek of that
pain. Scare him for my
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. I'm your Uncle Dennis, sitting in the squeaky chair tonight here. We're going to play lots more music from the 60s and the 70s, because that's what we do here on From the Cream to the Dregs. And, of course, we are in broadcasting in the Santa Cruz area at 101.1 megahertz, and out on the Internet we're found at a number of places, including www.freakradio.org, radio.indymedia.org, and various and sundry other places as you may find us. We don't even know all the places that we are, but we certainly try to be exactly where we are when we need to be, and that's right here. Coming up about 20 minutes or so, we'll reveal the brew of the week. Tonight's brew here on From the Cream to the Dregs, of course, at 9 o'clock is the Earth First Update. At 10 o'clock, the Mystery Group, and in between all that, 3 hours, or, you know, 2.5 hours of music. What can I say? It's free radio. We can do any damn thing we want, like play this.